The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. That very day, the first day of the week, two of Jesus' disciples were going to a village 7 miles from Jerusalem, a village called Emmaus, and they were conversing about all the things that had occurred. And it happened that while they were conversing and debating, Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. And he asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stopped, and looking downcast, one of them named Cleopas said to him in reply, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there these few days?" And he replied, "What sort of things?" And they said to him, "The things that happened to Jesus the Nazarene. He was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and before all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers both handed him over to a sentence of death, and they crucified him. We were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And besides all this, it is now the third day since it all took place. Some women from our group, however, have astounded us. They were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came back and reported that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who announced that he was alive. That some of those with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had told, but they did not see him." And Jesus said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets spoke. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them what referred to him in all of the scriptures. And as they approached the village to which they were going, he gave the impression that he was going on further. But they urged him, "Stay with us. It is nearly evening, and the day is almost over." So he went in and he stayed with them. And it happened that while he was with them at table, he took bread, said the blessing, broke it, and gave it to them. And with that, their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. But he vanished from their sight. And then they said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?" So they set out at once and returned to Jerusalem, where they found gathered together the 11 and those with them who were saying, "The Lord has truly been raised and has appeared to Simon." And then they recounted what happened to them on the way and how he was made known to them in the breaking of the bread. The Gospel of the Lord. Let me look at this gospel reading and draw from it some teaching that might enrich us or enlighten us in these mysterious times. First of all, let us pause and take a look at Luke and the Gospel of Luke. Most scholars agree that Luke was a Gentile, and he was writing his gospel for Gentiles. There are many subtle ways you will notice this in Luke's gospel. For instance, in Matthew and in Luke, they have the genealogy of Jesus, the only two gospels that have the legal genealogy of Jesus. In Matthew's gospel, which is a Jewish gospel, the genealogy of Jesus is traced from Abraham all the way down to Joseph. It's a legal genealogy. Whereas in Luke, he traces Jesus' genealogy from Joseph all the way back to Adam. Whereas Matthew wants to confirm descendants from Abraham, Luke, the Gentile, goes all the way back to Adam. Most people agree that Luke was a physician, and that's based on a reference that St. Paul has in his letter to Colossians, in which he makes a reference to Luke, my beloved physician. There is a very strong minority opinion that Luke was not a physician, even though we have named hospitals and all sorts of medical facilities after Luke. And the strong minority opinion says Luke was not a physician because in the time of Jesus, physicians were not highly educated persons. The physician was the fellow who cut your leg off if you need an amputation, but he wasn't highly educated, whereas Luke is a highly educated person. We draw this from the type of Greek that he uses in his gospel. It's highly sophisticated Greek, unlike the other writings in the New Testament. The next thing about Luke and his gospel is it's the longest of the four gospels. Even though Matthew has 28 chapters, the substance and the many verses makes Luke a longer gospel. And Luke writes more of the New Testament than any other author. He's exceptional. And there are many ways in which Luke is exceptional. There are teachings in the gospel of Luke which are unique to his understanding of Jesus. For instance, in chapter 10, you have the Good Samaritan, only in Luke. And after that, in 15, you have the prodigal son. Chapter 18, you have the tax collector and the Pharisee go up to the temple to pray, and the poor, humble tax collector is preferred in the eyes of God. It appears only in Luke. Jesus forgiving the soldiers who crucified him, only in Luke. And the thief, we call him Didymus, that's a later name given to him, who says, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus says, "And this day, you will be with me in paradise." Only in Luke, chapter 23. And finally, we have this story of today's gospel, two disciples on the road to Emmaus, which is unique to Luke. If you had only the gospel of Luke, you would find a very compassionate, understanding, and patient Jesus. Take away the other Gospels and look at Luke, and you will find a redeeming, loving God. Dante called Luke the scribe of the gentleness of Christ. So that's some background. Now let's look at this Gospel text, which we have today from the very end of the Gospel of Luke. The setting is a place we now call Abu Ghosh, Emmaus. And our pilgrim people who are listening will remember Abu Ghosh, 7 miles west of Jerusalem. A mystical place, a place of silence, a place of quiet, a place of reflection. There's a Benedictine monastery there, and of all the places in the land of Jesus, Monsignor Turgeson, who is my brother, and we've been there many, many times in pilgrims together and with various groups, we both agree that Abu Ghosh is one of our favorite places in the land of Jesus. And much of this is attached to the teaching of Abu Ghosh. Listen to the word of God here today. Two disciples are walking away from Jerusalem. Now, biblically, Jerusalem is your place of destiny. Jerusalem is the place where you find deep meaning in your life. Jerusalem is the place where you meet the fullness of who Jesus Christ is. And they are walking away from their destiny. They're walking into the sunset, going west. And they are downcast. And Jesus walks with them. He doesn't stop them. He does not make a judgment about them. He does not interrupt them. Jesus listens to them. Are you the only one, the only visitor to Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all these things? Well, what things, Jesus asks. Well, we had this Messiah person, Jesus the Nazarene, who calmed the waters, who fed the multitude, who was powerful in the eyes of God and the eyes of people. He cured the sick, he raised the dead to life. We were hoping that he was the one who would redeem Israel. We were hoping that he was the one who would teach us about life, the meaning of life. He was the one who would give us hope in life. And then he was crucified ignominiously at Golgotha, and we are crushed. All our expectations are gone. The hopes and dreams we had, they're all gone. We're downcast. And after they have explained this to Jesus, then he speaks to them. He enlightens them. Did you not know that the Christ had to suffer and had to die in order to rise again? And they listened. And now it was evening. They're walking into darkness. That's very important in understanding the teaching. They're walking away from their destiny, and they're walking into darkness. He gives the impression he's going further, and they say, stay with us. It is almost evening. And then they recognize him in the breaking of the bread. Not in the meal now. They see him in bread which is broken. So what does this mean to us? Let me give you two examples of how this comes alive. You're familiar with Tolstoy. In the first half of his life, he acquired fame and fortune, War and Peace, Anna Karenina, the death of Ivan Illich. I mean, he was extraordinary success and good fortune early in life. Then something extraordinary happens to him. His brother Nicholas dies, just 37 years old. And then shortly thereafter, Tolstoy is in Paris, and he witnesses an execution, a beheading. And these two experiences have a profound effect on Tolstoy. A spiritual awakening, he becomes a devout follower of Jesus Christ. He will write about this in his extraordinary autobiography in novel form called My Confession. He will speak about a new awareness, a new spiritual plateau in which he must live now as a follower of Jesus Christ. And by the way, this extraordinary book he has called My Confession had a profound effect on Gandhi and Martin Luther King, among many others. It was in his darkness, in the mystery of his life, that he found a new spiritual meaning. You'll find the same thing in Solzhenitsyn, in his Gulag Archipelago, where he writes, "Thank you, prison. Bless you, prison, for unrotting straw in my prison. I began to find a new awareness that the objective of my life was not money or fortune or fame, but a maturing of the human soul, a new awareness." So what does this mean to you? What does it mean to me? When I was a young priest, I received lots of accolades, an abundance of recognition, a lot of applause. It fed my ego. It made me feel important. It gave me a sense of being prominent. It didn't draw me closer to Jesus Christ. It fed my ego. And in the journey somewhere, I encountered darkness, failure. I became conscious of my sins. My brokenness came up before me in visions. I became uncertain, downcast. I had hoped that this was an experience of the Messiah, and it collapsed. And in the darkness, and in the struggle, I met Jesus Christ. It was in my brokenness that I discovered the compassion of Christ, the forgiveness, the understanding, the true Christ. That was my destiny. That was Jerusalem. That was Golgotha, where I would find a Messiah who suffered and died for me in my sinfulness and my brokenness. Not something achieved, not something merited, something truly gifted. And you must know that you will never realize who loves you until you fail, until you're in darkness. And then you discover who it is that truly loves you. And you will discover, I believe, that those who will love you in a time of crisis or failure or collapse are very, very few in number. Now I will begin to discover that my destiny. I was called into priesthood, not in spite of my weaknesses, But because of my weaknesses, it was in my poverty that I would reveal the power of Jesus Christ. The forgiveness, the compassion, the understanding that is deep within me to be shared with others, to bring the gospel to life, the inclusion, the sense of understanding, all comes from an experience of Jesus Christ forgiving me, understanding me, the compassion of Jesus Christ to include me in discipleship, not in spite of my weakness, but because of my weakness. For it is in my weakness that I will make known the glory of God. I must experience Golgotha. I must experience failure, suffering, reversal. Without that, I will not meet the Jesus Christ revealed in the Gospel of Luke. And so I arrive at a place in my life now where I am, where I think God means me to be in my life. It's not perfect, but it's peaceful. It's peaceful. I have listened to Jesus Christ, and I have struggled to embrace my destiny. It was in the experience of Jerusalem that I met the true Jesus Christ. So in these days of testing, these days of mystery, days of sacrifice, inconvenience, this is the place where we meet Jesus Christ.